Welcome to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films, every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific and online at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Rural hospitals around America are closing at an alarming rate, leaving communities without care. Since 2005, more than 190 rural hospitals, mostly in the South, have closed. In this quietly scathing documentary film, If Dreams Were Lightning, Rural Healthcare Crisis, Oscar and Emmy-nominated director Ramin Barani visits Appalachia, where American communities are left with limited or no access to healthcare. He explores the rural healthcare crisis through the eyes of those struggling in it and to the dedicated doctors trying to reach them. Again, the film is called If Dreams Were Lightning. This film is currently available on the PBS Independent Lens site. And it's an honor to welcome back to the program the filmmaker responsible for such films as Man Push Cart, Chop Shop, 99 Homes, Ramin Barani. Ramin, welcome back to Film School Radio.
Thank you. Good to be back.
I love this film for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is something that is gotten lost in so much of the reporting on healthcare in this country, the lack of access to healthcare, in addition to subpar healthcare around the country, but the disappearance of hospitals, rural hospitals. How did you get onto this particular idea?
I had worked with ITBS on a couple of short films, a fiction film I made called Plastic Bag back in 2009 with Werner Herzog voicing the consciousness of a plastic bag, and another short doc called Bloodkin. And when they asked if I wanted to do another, I did, because I like making these short films in between the feature length ones. And I had been reading a lot about hospitals closing in rural America, and I'm from North Carolina. My dad was a doctor. And as a kid, I used to go up with him to the mountains. He used to have a clinic that he would visit up there a few times a month. And I was very curious to know what was going on there today. And the stakes seemed like life or death. So it seemed like there should be an interesting story there and something I could learn and uncover. And meeting Dr. Teresa and Dr. Paul in the health wagon was what kind of sparked me to think, okay, here's the film.
This has been an ongoing crisis. It started in the very beginning of the film. We see a statistic that since 2005, 190? What was the number I remember? 190 hospitals have closed in the U.S., the majority in the South of these rural hospitals. That's a lot of hospitals to close.
The number kept changing as we were making the film because it took a while to edit it. And then we had to go back and film an additional part and come back and COVID and whatnot. So that opening title card kept going up. I mean, if you live in those areas, you don't really have anywhere to go. You're often driving such a long distance. By the time you get there, your wife or daughter has delivered the baby in the car, or on a more grave way, somebody has died of a heart attack because they can't get there in time. And that leaves this mobile health clinic run by the two doctors, Dr. Teresa and Dr. Paula, who are kind of riding around in a mobile health clinic trying to reach communities that have a lot of people living in them that don't have access to health care, hospitals, they're underinsured, they have no insurance. And that kind of provided this ability for me to have these vignettes of different characters, you know, around Virginia, Tennessee, Kentucky.
There are some striking examples of people who are dealing with healthcare issues and lack of access. And there's a quote in the film that I think sums it up, which you just were describing, which is your financial situation is the judge, jury, and executioner in these particular communities where they lack access to good health care. That is such a succinct and powerful way to put it.
Yeah, that's one of the doctors said that. And yeah, it's true. It was a really interesting cross-section of people we spoke with. And right now we're talking so much about kind of the impact and the idea of healthcare, but I was really trying to dig into who they were as people because, you know, I think we've all read about alarming statistics about healthcare. We've all heard how in the world is the richest country on earth have such a abysmal healthcare system for people, how many people have no access. But I was trying to get into who the people were, you know, what are their dreams, their hopes, their lives, so that we could start to feel more in tune with these statistics that we read headlines for. It wasn't that different of an approach than with my film 99 Homes with Andrew Garfield and Mike Shannon and Laura Dern, where Andrew's character gets evicted from his home by Michael Shannon. He lives with his mom, Laura Dern. And that was an attempt at trying to put a face onto what was the housing crisis. We read about it, but we didn't know what it was really. How did it impact people? And I wanted to try to dig into that here, that kind of same approach here.
Yeah, and we spend, as I mentioned in the introduction, we spend a lot of time in what is known as Appalachia, and the stories resonate because we've heard some version of this for many, many, many years. There's another bigger picture to this hospital situation, is the rise of the nonprofit hospitals, the giant hospitals in metropolitan areas that have really sucked the life out of so much of the healthcare that used to be provided in these smaller communities. But that's for another story. That's for another film. But we're seeing the ramifications of all of that. And by the way, Dr. Teresa Tyson and Dr. Paula Hill Collins are the two physicians that we were talking about. And what a contrast. Their very optimistic point of view, driving around in this very big, very colorful bus to these different communities. What's that like when you're in that bus with them and they
Yeah, I
pull into
mean,
a community?
yeah, they're very charismatic. For people who haven't seen the film, they're very charismatic. They're best friends since they were kids. They're very beautiful. They're very talkative, and I don't mention that they're beautiful for no reason. They play on this persona because they need to keep raising money for their health wagon. So they're excellent speakers. They are good at getting attention, and they're from the South. Southern people in general are very good talkers. They're charming. They're storytellers. They have great sense of humor, and they're community oriented. One of the things that keeps coming up in the film is it's a community down there, and everyone knows everyone. They don't know you; they know your cousin or your uncle or your brother, or you go to the same church, you know. So they know one another, and that really helped also for the filmmaking because the people we met immediately would have some level of trust with me to come into their lives and ask them personal questions because I was with Paula and Teresa. That helped. And so it added a great knowledge to the film. The quote you referenced earlier, Judge Executioner, that's from them. But also, it added a humor and a warmth to the film, which it needs because there's some heavy subjects, you know? So it's good that we can laugh sometimes in the film.
Yeah, and at the very beginning of the film, you give us a sort of an example of what's happened to these hospitals. These are buildings; they didn't just go away, right? They're still out there, and the one in, is it Harriman, Tennessee? So I think the first one we visit, and they, when it closed down, the hospital was offered to the VA for a dollar, and they wouldn't take it. Now, tell us what happened to the hospital. Tell us if you want to tell us why, but
Yes.
yeah.
You know, I was looking for hospitals that had closed to film them to visualize what we're talking about. And the field producer called me and said, I don't know if you'll be interested in, but this hospital that closed, something else is going on in there. And that's what's revealed in the opening scene of the film, which is it has turned into a paranormal activity recreational center where you could spend money, go there and try to uncover ghosts, demons, paranormal plasmic, you know, ectoplasm and I thought it was just darkly humorous and also, you know, kind of tragic because one of the characters that you referenced is he was failed by the VA, the Vietnam vet who had been bathed by Agent Orange and had cancer, and they kept telling him he did not have cancer and wouldn't treat him, and it ended up being the doctors in the health wagon that basically helped him make sure he didn't die. So it was a darkly funny way to start the film, yes.
I believe you're speaking about Matt Kaiser, who
Yes,
was a
that guy.
Vietnam veteran, who, and there's a consistent theme here in the film that I think really says so much. It's that, and it kind of refers back to that quote, but people had jobs, they had healthcare, and especially people who were in the coal mining industry. This is the one that jumps out because this is a part of the world where coal is king. And that one particular person was talking about he had great healthcare until he didn't have a job, and then he had no healthcare. There are a
Well,
lot of
yeah,
people said that, yes.
the coal miner had been down in those mines for 20 some years, and as soon as he got injured, he had knee, back, so many injuries, including ultimately black lung disease. Once he couldn't go into the mine anymore, they dropped him, they dropped his insurance, and now he's barely able to afford his coverage. He can't. He said that Medicare covers, I believe he says in the film, 80%. And when I ask him, how do you cover final 20, he said, "I can barely do it." And this was a man who was crawling on his hands and knees for 20 years, making money for companies. And now, as soon as he's in need of the healthcare, they drop him.
He looked young.
He was still very fit, you know, and he was a fit guy, but he's on a respiration system the entire time through the interview. He cannot breathe without it.
One of the things he said was, and this is insidious and evil, that the doctor told him that he had the lungs of a 23-year-old.
Yes. Yeah. Again, these are things that, you know, people in other parts of the world can't comprehend about America. And I'm lucky. I have health insurance. I think a lot of people aren't in touch with these communities or don't know someone who doesn't have insurance and doesn't realize how precarious their lives are, how one accident, how one genetic condition that your family member might have suddenly turns your entire life into a tailspin and you're suddenly floundering. I don't have solutions. I just wanted to talk to these people about their lives and their dreams and hope that it would impact someone. And we can see the real angels in the film or the doctors in that health wagon. But there's got to be a better solution than two doctors driving around in a wagon.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to let our listeners know we're speaking with Ramin Bahrani, and he is the director of the documentary film, If Dreams Were Lightning, Rural Healthcare Crisis. It was part, as I said, of the Independent Lens anthology series presented by ITVS as well. And
Mike, can I tell you where the title comes from?
Yes, please.
If Dreams Were Lightning, I kept trying to think of a title that, again, would go deeper, because I'm asking people in the film always, what are they dreaming about? Maybe what were their dreams when they were young? What are they now? And the answers were very revealing to me, and often surprising, and in some cases quite tragic. And I couldn't think of a title. And I had just gone down to the Ryman to attend the John Prine tribute concert after John Prine's passing, one of the great singer-songwriters we've had in America. And I loved him so much. I was trying to think of a title, and I heard Angel from Montgomery again, and he has that lyric, "If dreams were lightning, if thunder were desire, this old house would have burned down a long time ago." And I thought, that's the title, If Dreams Were Lightning.
And you were right about him. He was a treasure.
Great.
I remember the woman who has, I believe she was the one who had diabetes. That was Linda Shekels. And you asked her, what are your dreams? And she said, "I don't want to lose my home."
Yeah, it's a mother and daughter who were so close and united. It's so funny. Some of their responses were hilarious. And yeah, when I she told me about her dreams as a child, which were also quite telling and kind of brought a smile and a warmth to her. But when I asked her about her dreams now, the expression of, "I saw somebody crumble," that's what it was. I've seen the film so many times because you edit it. It takes months to edit a movie. But every time I see her, I feel so much pain watching her. I tried to just look at everybody with empathy and grateful that they allowed me into their lives. Yeah, I mean, one of the stories does end in a very kind of shocking way.
Yeah.
Something happened months after we finished filming that when we screened the film at Telluride or Doc NYC or in other venues, I mean, people were shrieking or gasping in the audience. It's disturbing. We had to re-edit the movie around that section and shuffle the sequence of the vignettes. But I hope it might shock somebody into action. We've been trying to have an impact campaign and get it in front of politicians, industry leaders in the field of healthcare, politicians who are in these communities that might be able to use this to fuel a solution. And I don't know if anything will come of it. It seems like people have been trying for decades to change the healthcare system in America, and they have not been able to do it yet.
Let's talk about who the film is dedicated to.
Yeah, I dedicated the film to my dad, who's a doctor. He comes from a small village in Iran, in the south, actually, not that different from the south of America. It was a very small town. And he managed to work his way, he comes from a pretty poor background, managed to work his way up into the big city of Tehran, the capital, and became a doctor. The first thing he did was go back into the deep south with a Jeep and a driver and a bunch of health equipment, medical equipment. And he hit the road into these kind of very rural areas, places that had never seen or even heard of a doctor, where when he gave somebody an aspirin, they thought it was a miracle. And he performed all kinds of procedures, tracheotomies, delivered babies, you know, amputee, so many different things. And as soon as I saw the health wagon in the film, I said, oh my God, it's like what my dad did back in Iran, but here in the South in America. And because he was visiting clinics up near Boone, North Carolina, and that's where I had gone with him as a kid and sat in the waiting room where everyone smoked a cigarette back then. You could do that.
The doctor smoked cigarettes back
Oh, everyone, even the patients in the waiting room, anyone could smoke back then everywhere. And I was really curious to know about that and the connection. So I dedicated to my father. Yeah.
Well, with this film, and you mentioned the one you did with Werner Herzog earlier, and then with Second Chance, it feels like there's a part of your filmmaking interest that are diving into kind of the other part, the other America, if you will. And my thanks to you for doing the work that you're doing.
Thank you, and thanks for having me on again. It's good to speak.
Thank you. Again, we've been speaking with Ramin Barani, the director of If Dreams Were Lightning, Rural Healthcare Crisis. It's available through Independent Lens PBS. You can go to their anthology series of Independent Lens and find out how to watch it. You'll see it there. Thank you so very much for your time today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films. You can find out more about the program at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week with another edition of Film School Radio.